Live from New York, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Got my mojo working, but just don't work on you.
Hi, everyone. Nice to have you with us today. I'm on the road, making my way back to New York City. I'll be there in 2 days. And so I'm broadcasting by telephone, but I think most of you will be able to hear what I have to say. I'm not having guests, can't have guests, because only one person can use the phone lines because of the technical limitations right now. We'll be back to our regular guests in a couple of days. Also, I'm going to be sharing some clips today that show you how misguided we are in so many ways. We're going to talk with a group of women, all devout Muslims, who are standing up and saying, where is it in the Quran, where is it in any holy book that we subscribe to that you treat us with sexual mutilation or honor killings? And these are all educated women. It'll be an interesting discussion. You won't want to miss that. Also, the latest on vaccines. There's some new information now. And I was saying the other day that we have to look at toxicology to see why we should be concerned about the safety of vaccines. Sherry Timpany with the latest. So we thought that George Bush, Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld were talking about weapons of mass destruction. Half truth. They did, but they weren't the first. I'll play you a clip of who first advocated invading Iraq because of weapons of mass destruction. You'll find it interesting. The Federal Reserve lost $9 trillion. And the person who's the head of its inspection division couldn't answer a single question in a congressional hearing. How could anyone lose $9 trillion? Not know where it's at, where it went, who got it? Nothing. And also, there's more and more evidence of the danger of fluoride. And we'll have Abby Martin on talking about what we didn't know about fluoride that's in the drinking water and the toothpaste and the mouthwashes and why it is so dangerous. Plus, we always have the latest on health and healing, and we'll be dealing with privatization has been a colossal flop by Dr. Alan Francis in Psychology Today. And also, from our environmental segment, part of Antarctica has begun thawing unusually fast, leaving scientists unsure whether a natural cycle of human-caused climate change is responsible. No matter what's responsible, it's going in the water. And we're talking about trillions of gallons per year. And also, from Professor Paul Craig Roberts, rule by corporations, the Trans-Pacific Partnership is really about corporate empowerment. He gives a really good spin on this, and I'll share that with you. And why the privatization of America's police is such a dangerous trend by Claire Burnish from antimedia.com. But we always start with the latest on health and healing. First up, and this is from Berkeley neuroscientist at the University of California, Berkeley, published in the peer-reviewed journal Nature Neuroscience. And they say that poor sleep, that's most Americans and the vast majority of younger people, is linked to a toxic buildup of Alzheimer's protein and memory loss. Quote, sleep may be a missing piece in the Alzheimer's disease puzzle. Scientists at the University of California, Berkeley, have found compelling evidence that poor sleep, particularly a deficit of the deep restorative slumber needed to hit the save button on memories, is a channel through which the beta amyloid protein believed to trigger Alzheimer's disease attacks the brain long-term memory. Quote, our findings reveal a new pathway through which Alzheimer's disease may cause memory declines later in life. That's according to the neuroscientist Professor Matthew Walker, senior author of the study. So let me put this into a context where it'll have some benefit for us. We don't have any discipline about our sleep today as a society. Individuals may, certainly. And some parents may. They believe their children should be in bed and not have cell phones or computers and be able to sleep. They have that relationship with their children where the children will have to obey, like it or not. And sometimes, even though we may not like it as children, it's for our betterment. Now, think of the parent that doesn't want to ever be perceived by the child as being an unloving parent, so whatever the child wants to do, you allow them to do. In effect, you're buying their love. That's a terrible mistake, because it later pays negative dividends for the rest of that person's life, not just psychologically, but also physically. Remember, if there's no boundaries earlier in life, if there's no filtering system earlier in life, if there is no discipline at the spiritual level early in life, then there's none the rest of your life. Hence, you'll say what you want to say, irrespective of whether it hurts people or creates pain in other people. You will do what you want to do, even if it's to your own detriment. So there's a cause and effect, and we better pay attention to it. Now people get into college, and the only thing that's important is grades. And not just grades. Even at Harvard, there's a whole group of really depressed, anxious, four-point students because they're four-point, but then there's four-point plus, meaning people have social advantages because of their family and where they're going to go to work afterwards. Four-point because they study nonstop, they don't have a life, and they didn't have the social advantage. So now they're looking at how everything's stacked against them, even when they're equal in their class. So now they don't sleep. Kids in school are studying so hard that they don't sleep either. And then when you get out of school, you start socializing. If you've worked hard all day, you socialize until in the middle of the night. Or you don't socialize. Instead, you eat and you watch television. Or you become a constant participant, a passive voyeuristic participant to porn or whatever's on the internet. All of those have one thing in common. Poor sleep creates a toxic buildup of the amyloid plaque, which is a protein that goes into your brain, and the more of it you have, the quicker your dementia, but it doesn't happen Alzheimer's. No one ever just gets Alzheimer's. You first have, where did I put my keys? I know I put that somewhere. Where did I put my, did I turn off the lights? Simple things like that. But when that starts to happen, that's already a red flag. That's when a person should be on an intensive brain detoxification protocol. But we think it's normal. And besides, we still function. And we have great old memory. We can remember everything in details from the past. So you go forward another 10 years. Now it gets a little more serious. Now you begin to forget what you just read. You can't remember the movie you just walked out of the theater seeing. You forget conversations you had. And then you start to realize something's wrong. But because you keep forgetting what is wrong, you have to keep asking people what is wrong. And you might ask them the same thing 20 times in an hour. Tell you how bad it's gotten. A longtime friend of mine, and we've been close friends for decades because we both started our careers at about the same time. And we used to hang at these wonderful parties. And you don't have parties like this today. There was no drugs. No one got drunk. If you did, you weren't invited back. But you had wonderful conversations. These were salon conversations. I will never forget it because it was one of the remarkable moments of my life, one of the things I can think back with great joy. I was invited because I was a very young, best-selling author, and everybody was interested in health. Whether they practiced it or not, everybody had a question. So I would get invited because there were no older. There was only older nutritionists, no one younger. I was the only young nutritionist in the United States who had a best-selling book. So I would be invited, but there would always be a famous painter, a sculptor. There'd be a world traveler. There would be a dancer. There would be different types of artists. And what was fun is that everybody, political activists, everybody would contribute something. You were expected to, or you weren't invited back. So everybody would talk and contribute things, and you'd leave just as if your whole brain was flowing with stimulation and ideas. And there's nothing more exciting being around people who are doing things, not complaining. In fact, the hostess and the people who hosted these parties were generally one-time debutantes in the 1920s or 30s or 40s who were very successful, and now they were older, and they wanted to have these salons, kind of a harken back to Gertrude Stein's salons in Paris in the 1920s, 30s, where people coming and you would feel good about life because these were people celebrating life through celebrating their challenges and what they were doing. And I never once heard the woe is me story, not once in years. No one came to, you know, gain your sympathy by crying about what wasn't working in their life. We knew things wouldn't work. We knew everyone had crisis. We knew everyone had challenges. We knew everyone had ups and downs. But when you were there, you shared something to motivate and stimulate. So when I'd be walking home, and I'd walk from a place clear up the east side over across Central Park and to my little apartment. I had a little tiny one-room apartment on the Upper West Side. And the whole wow, I'm thinking, wow, was that interesting listening to what that person was doing. And someone would, an artist would bring, you know, their latest paintings, unroll them. We'd all take a look at them. And you had appreciation for what that person was doing. In any case, that was a remarkable time. Now one of those people who I would see him two or three times a week at different parties. He has advanced dementia. And the trouble is, it's going now into really advanced. He'll probably be institutionalized in the next 6 months. I don't see him not being, because he can't function. He'll walk into a restaurant, not know where he's at, and ask, where is the restaurant? I was just speaking with a restaurant owner, tell me about how depressing it is now, because it didn't realize what he's saying. That's what happens when you don't deal with it. But you have to have a support system. You have to have someone who's agreeing, yes, this person has a problem, let's work on it. And what people lack today is the average person lacks a support system. Even people who have families that love them, that doesn't mean they're going to support them if the therapy is a natural and non-toxic one. They would support them if they went to the doctor and got pills or surgery or institutionalization, that they would support. But the moment you say, we're going to try something different, we're going to chelate out the amyloid plaque and get this person back their brain, we can actually reverse it. Orthodox medicine can't. They'll say, no, we don't, that's too radical. No, let me tell you, radical. Death is radical. Hospice is radical. Seeing a person in a hospice bed screaming at what they resented that they didn't do in life, and only in that moment when they're a day or an hour away from death, and they don't have to abide by anyone else's rules, not the preacher, the rabbi, the imam, not the politician, not the family hierarchical, matriarch, patriarch, when they can simply be. And I almost never see that. In fact, I never see it. Ever. I can't recall in the last 5 years when I've seen someone who could simply be a completely independent person. Attached at some level is always a vein coming into like a giant cancer that's hidden in the closet, but it's got a metastasized, and out comes something that keeps that person attached to that cancer. But then it's all over. You know, when the cat comes on your bed, you're the next to die. That's how it works. Going to in a hospice center in the United States, cats know when you're going to die. And they give you comfort. They purr. They're there. They'll lay on your lap, your chest, and at least you're bonding with something. It's nature's wise gatekeeper allowing you to pass. Other creatures can have intuition and do. Cats are unique in that sense. But you have to be in a hospice to see this. And only in a hospice, only in the last time, when someone says, you know what I regret? And in that moment, a door opens, and it's flooded with everything that they regret in their life. They've had it kept hidden, tight, bound, disguised. And now it all unravels and it flows out. It's cathartic. And you hear him talking about things, some things significant, other things insignificant. But brother, do you hear them talk about what they didn't do, they should have, wished they had, but there were always some reason why they couldn't do it. And then it became too late. They didn't have the support. And more often than not, I hear that over and over and over again. If only I would have had the support. If only I'd have had the support. I had no one to help me in the time when I needed to use a crisis to change, and instead I adapted to the crisis and I didn't change. So for me, the takeaway message is, find yourself a support system that will be there with you so you don't end up like my friend who's going to be gone very shortly and his family will not support him. And I have no right to step over any boundary. I must respect the rights of the family and my friend. But now the friend cannot make any decision for himself. It's not possible. I see it all the time. Oh, by the way, some news for Utrecia Lee's brother and nephew. Brother's a medical doctor. Nephew is a... She's still alive. Not only is she still alive, after being terminal, she should be dead, but she just had her birthday yesterday. She's 62 years of age, and she also made two major breakthroughs yesterday. Instead of being in bed, where stage 4B lung cancer metastasized three different areas would put a person in cachexic, she walked, power walked, 5 miles and is no pain at all. Now, that does not mean the cancer is not in her body. It doesn't mean she's not terminal. It means that she is not suffering. It means that every day she is celebrating the day. And she's getting stronger every single day because she has a support system. And that's what we need. We all need support systems in our life. And if you're around the wrong people, then select people who will support you and forgive the people who won't. Because even people who make chronically wrong choices frequently do so out of ignorance or out of hubris. In any case, when I think about how bad our sleeping habit is and how many people are now going to be developing Alzheimer's in their 40s and 50s instead of 60s, 70s, and 80s. So we're going to start seeing an awful lot of younger people ending up with diseases of heart disease, diabetes, cancers, arthritis, autoimmune conditions that we never have seen in the past because of something as simplistic as feeling that they can beat the odds and create a world where there's no consequence to cause and effect. Read the article from the University of Berkeley on what happens to your brain when you don't get sleep. No one is smart enough to bypass that cause and effect. Also, there's good research on how the curcumin and the plant of the curcumin, that's where we make the curry from, how this can really be important to us in helping across all the boundaries, meaning it has multiple uses, from heart disease to diabetes to cancer, to even Alzheimer's and other neurological ailments, autoimmune conditions, inflammatory conditions. It turns off inflammation, and it helps with diabetic neuropathy. It is probably the single most powerful healing herb in the world, and also one of the most tested. Published the latest study just out this week in the Journal of Molecules. Quote, the data suggests that chronic inflammation, oxidative stress, and other chronic diseases are closely linked, and that antioxidant properties of curcumin can play a key role in the prevention and treatment of chronic inflammation diseases. So, and this was done at MD Anderson Cancer Center, and published in peer-reviewed journal also Phytotherapy Research, that found that curcumin regulates inflammation, quote, that plays a major role in most chronic illnesses, including neurodegenerative, cardiovascular, pulmonary, metabolic, autoimmune, and neoplastic diseases. And yet another MD Anderson study found that curcumin exhibits, quote, antioxidant, anti-inflammatory, antiviral, antibacterial, antifungal, and anti-cancer activities, all bolstering its potential against various malignant diseases, diabetes, allergies, arthritis, Alzheimer's, and other chronic illnesses, end quote. So if there's one herb above and beyond all others that stands so far above all the others that it dwarfs them in, by comparison, it is curcumin. I suggest always having curcuminoids standardized in your home, because you never know when it can make a difference. And finally, the British Medical Journal published an article about getting up and standing up for at least 2 hours daily during working hours. Quote, office workers should be on their feet for a minimum of 2 hours daily during working hours, recommends the first ever UK guidance designed to curb the health risks of too much cumulative sitting time, and published online in the British Journal of Sports Medicine. Very good advice. So let's get up on our feet and work on our feet. That can make all the difference in the world. One other thing from Touro College University System. A spoonful of cinnamon can keep the doctor away. Quote, a spoonful of cinnamon can deactivate viruses before they infect humans, according to new study of botanical extracts and their effects on pathogens. Researchers tested the Phi-X virus, similar to viruses that infect animals and humans, to see if it was susceptible to the Saigon and Ceylon cinnamons, as well as extracts from onion, garlic, cloves, peppermint, cacao, and Spanish saffron. The cinnamon deactivated 99.9% of the virus in lab tests, while the others had no effect. Quote, the results validate our belief that a diet that includes a tablespoon of cinnamon once or twice a day can be effective in eliminating or preventing viruses from infecting humans and causing sickness, such as colds, flu, and even herpes. End quote. That was from Dr. Milton Scheifenbauer of the New York School of Career and Applied Studies, a division of Touro College University System. So, there you have it. The latest on health and healing, I'm Gary Knoll. Now, here's something new on vaccines. You haven't read it yet? I'll share it with you for the first time. This is from Life Science. Quote, the recent outbreaks of whooping cough in the United States may be due in part to a change made 2 decades ago to vaccine ingredients, a new study finds. How many cases? There are 48,000 cases just this last year. By the way, whooping cough is also called pertussis. And that's the most cases since 1955. Now, normally, there were very few cases historically. And they want to know why. So they looked at everything, using a new model going from 1950 to 2009. And they found the quote that a change in vaccine ingredients was the best explanation for the recent whooping cough outbreaks. And this is published in the PLOS One, which is a major scientific journal. So there is something very important. So this is not told that the vaccine is causing the disease for which people are being vaccinated. This is all from peer-reviewed literature. This is all good science. And I promise you, you will not hear a word about this anywhere because they don't want people to know. Now, for all of our listeners in the United Kingdom, here is something that I would suggest you address. They want to fine anyone who is sleeping, who's homeless in doorways, £1,000, which is about $1,300. Now, I'm trying to find the logic in this. A person sleeping on the street, not by choice, but because they're too poor to afford a place in the shelters, have already stated that they're over capacity. There's just too many homeless people, and there's not enough public room or public beds. And there's almost always long lines that will wait all day long to get one of those coveted spots at night. So, for those who have no place to sleep, and they're poor as can be, and they frequently are also very hungry because they don't have food money, you now want to give them a fine of $1,000, $1,300. And then you charge them interest on it. So when they can't afford to pay it and they won't, you can throw them in jail and then double the amount. And then it keeps increasing and increasing. Where there's any sense of common sense, reason, or rationality in what you're doing over there. And I'm sure that the average citizen living in the United Kingdom would be opposed to this inhumane measure. But I'm also certain that the corrupt, banal, and, in my opinion, sociopathic members of your parliament, your House of Lords, and which is such an antiquated, archaic, entitled peerage system, morons, that they did never consider the consequences of anything they do. So stand up. Speak out for the homeless. After all, the poor and the homeless do not have advocates of any political measure. So, finally, from our environmental segment, we have this. This is from Climate News Network, Tim Radford. Quote, Antarctic glaciers, once thought relatively stable, are starting to melt. Evidence from the five-year satellite study from the frozen rivers on the southern Antarctic Peninsula now reveal that these are shedding ice at the rate of 60 cubic kilometers a year. That's 300 trillion gallons of water a year is now going into the oceans. And they don't know why. And this was published in the journal Science. So, remember what I was saying, we're now in chaos theory, where as it gets hotter, it creates a feedback loop. It's melting from underneath and it's melting from on top. And you're going to have some major shelves, like the Larsen B shelf. And one of these shelves is as large as the state of Vermont. And when it breaks off, you're going to see a measurable increase in the rise of water throughout the world. That also means that the tide coming in at night will increase. It means that storms will surge further inland and flood lower Manhattan. So you don't have to have a whole continent melt. All you have to have is enough of it start to break off, calving, and then there's no backstop. And when you have no backstop and this melts, gravitational pull plus the trillions of gallons of water underneath that are melting will just act like skids, DW-40 sprayed on it, and it'll just slide right into the ocean, large, giant chunks. And you're going to see this within the next 5 years. So just want to give you a heads up on that. Also, I want to share something from Paul Craig Roberts on the Trans-Pacific Partnership, because this is the most evil piece of legislation in American history, and it will have devastating effects. I would have thought that all the unions who at least are willing to cooperate would say to the administration and the legislators, we will not vote for you and we will have general strikes, because this is going to destroy the union movement in the United States. It'll also destroy the quality of our life, our environment, the quality of our food. It's got more things that could go wrong with it than any other piece of legislation we've ever had. Here's what Professor Paul Craig Roberts has to say. Quote, the transatlantic and transpacific trade and investment partnerships have nothing to do with free trade. Free trade is used as a disguise to hide the power these agreements give to corporations to use lawsuits to overturn sovereign laws of nations that regulate pollution, food safety, GMOs, and minimum wages. The first thing to understand is that these so-called partnerships are not laws written by Congress. The U.S. Constitution gives Congress the authority to legislate. But these laws are being written without the participation of Congress. The laws are being written by corporations solely in the interest of their power and profit. The Office of U.S. Trade Representative was created in order to permit corporations to write law that serves only their interest. This fraud on the Constitution and the people is covered up by calling trade laws treaties. Indeed, Congress is not even permitted to know what's in the laws and is limited to the ability to accept or refuse what is handed to Congress for a vote. Normally, Congress accepts because, quote, so much work has been done and free trade will benefit all of us, so they say. The advocates have diverted attention from the content of the laws to fast track. When Congress votes fast track, it means Congress accepts that corporations can write the trade laws without the participation of Congress. Even criticisms of the partnership are smokescreens. Countries accused of slave labor, think of Pakistan, India, Afghanistan, China, could be excluded, but won't be. Super patriots complain that the U.S. sovereignty is violated by foreign interests, but U.S. sovereignty is not, is violated by U.S. corporations. Others claim yet more U.S. jobs will be offshored. In actual fact, the partnerships are unnecessary to advance the loss of American jobs, as there is nothing that inhibits jobs offshoring now. What the partnerships do is to make private corporations immune to the laws of sovereign countries on the grounds that laws of countries adversely impact corporate profits and constitute restraint of trade. For example, under the Transatlantic Partnership, French laws against GMOs would be overturned by as restraint of trade by a lawsuit filed by Monsanto. Countries that require testing of imported foods such as pork for trichinosis and fumigation would be subject to lawsuits from corporations because these regulations increase the cost of imports. Countries that do not provide monopoly protection for brand name pharmaceuticals or chemical products and allow generics in their place can be sued for damages by corporations. Obama himself has no input into the process. Here is what is going on. The trade representative is a corporate stooge. He serves the private corporations and will go on to $1 million annual salary. The corporations have bribed political leaders in every country to sign away their sovereignty and the general welfare of their people to private corporations. Corporations have paid U.S. senators large sums for transferring Congress's lawmaking powers to corporations. Yes, corporations paid U.S. senators fast-track dollars. And when these partnerships pass, no country that signed will have any legislative authority to legislate or enforce any law that any corporation regards as wrong to its bottom line. Yes, the great promiser of change is bringing change. He is turning Asia, Europe, and the United States over to rule by corporations. Only those who have sold their integrity for money sign these agreements. Apparently, Merkel, a Washington vassal, is one of them. According to the news reports, both of France's main political parties have sold out to the corporations. And so it goes around the world. So I agree with Paul Craig Roberts. And therefore, there is no argument that we need these. We do not. And by the way, a news clipping just came to my attention this morning that in Australia, now that's a country that's a mess at every level. And you've got one of the toughest fascist governments in the world in France. It's also bad in Canada, and idiots in France. But in Australia, you've got leaders that are first-rate fascists. And this morning, they're saying that every member of your parliament must sign a four-year non-disclosure to see what's inside of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Meaning, no matter what you see, no matter how bad it is, no matter how you feel about it, you cannot say a word to anyone for 4 years. Why would any citizenry accept legislation that is done in secret, done for the exclusive profit of corporations, and then penalizes legislators as if the legislators should not say a word about it? That's how bad it is. That's our administration, corrupt, at every level, at every administration, our bureaucracies, massive cancers. And yet the average person is just disconnected from this. This is information that the average person doesn't want to hear because it will change some of their perceptions of their own responsibilities they have elected. We're going to take a journey now, and we're going to listen up here, and we're going to hear a group of women, all Muslims, and several are physicians and teachers, all are activists who have something to say about the honor killings and honor mutilations. Let's hear what they have to say.
My name is Raquel Saraswati. I am an activist, and I write about the abuses of women in the Muslim world and worldwide.
I'm Nazi Eftekhari. A lot of the human rights work I do is, I think, in reaction to literally, you know, waking up in the morning and taking these events around the world very personally.
My name is Nazanin Afshinjam. I'm a human rights activist, and I focus a lot on women's rights issues.
She is a former Miss World Canada.
I'm only one person, and sometimes I feel helpless and innocent. And I wish there was others around me, and that's why I was so pleased in that salon setting to meet other women who are working on different issues for women's rights.
I'm Fahima Hashim from Sudan, and I live there.
Islam is my spiritual journey, and it is part of that journey that has brought me here to share with my sisters, because I feel like all of you that the struggle for women is our struggle.
Saudi women aren't allowed to drive themselves to work or even to the doctor's office.
The atrocities and the disadvantages perpetrated on women in the name of Islam are real, and they're manifold.
Serious sexual harassment and attacks on women in Egypt. Groping, stripping, and rapes have become increasingly frequent.
A mutilation of the body, acid violence.
There has been a wave of killings specifically targeting girls who study or women who work.
There's a terrible fear of the educated, empowered woman.
I have the right of education. I have the right to play. I have the right to sing. I have the right to talk. I have the right to go to market. I have the right to speak up.
The Taliban targeted 15-year-old Malala Yousafzai and her friends.
He asked for Malala by name, and then he shot her.
This is one of the most alarming human rights issues in the world.
This is being done in the name of some ideology that is full of violence and hatred.
The causes of crisis have everything to do with the part of tradition and religion, which are clearly about the oppression of women. It's the honor system. The
concept of honor, it's very difficult to explain it to Western societies. A lot of it has to do with how women behave and the sexuality of women.
Honor is something that is carried and contained in women and is there to be guarded by men.
The honor of a family is vested in a woman's body. The honor of a family is vested in what she does and what she says. His honor is connected to what she does and says. It's a misplaced sense of honor.
It's a harmless word replacing control of male over female.
For me and for the girls and boys, because we support boys too, when they give voice to honor, they describe it as being like the weather. It's ever-present, it's all-consuming, it's unpredictable. It's fluid, it's never static, you never know which way it's going to shift and change. And one of the big questions we ask is, what does honour mean to you? Ask a victim that question. Straight away, it unlocks Pandora's box.
Female genital cutting. Most commonly done before puberty, some young girls will have their clitoris completely removed to preserve their virginity.
Female genital mutilation is not advocated in Islam in any way, shape, or form. It doesn't appear in the Quran, but has very much been adopted by some Muslim societies.
My cousins were just going for circumcision the next day, so everybody was preparing food and they're making big event. So I was in my uncle's house, so I went, I had small booklets on how harmful circumcision is, and I sneaked up to his room and I gave him the books and I told him, don't do that. You know what happened? He came because his eldest daughter was circumcised. He came crying, and he really asked his daughter to forgive him, and he refused for the other two to be circumcised the next day.
When we're talking about the root cause of addressing gender disparity and empowering women, we do have to look at child marriages.
There's a real kind of a lack of an understanding of what women and girls face once they're forced into a marriage, right? I mean, these marriages are consummated through rape.
During sex, I was crying and begging him to stop, but he didn't listen. Then he put his hand on my mouth like this. I couldn't breathe, and I was crying, but he used me anyway.
My sister suffered a horrific marriage.
She was a 15-year-old in school that went missing from education, as they still do today. And nobody noticed her missing. And she was gone for 9 months and came back as somebody's wife. You know, she missed so much school that she was put back into my year at school. She had a wedding ring on her finger. She spoke English. She just in the middle of her GCSEs, and she never wore Western dress again. And nobody stopped to ask the question why. And I reflect upon that when she died, because she set herself on fire and died, and that's the last picture I remember her looking like that at me.
A mother and father accused of dousing their teenage daughter in acid. Her crime, looking at a boy. She turned to look at him. I told her before not to do that. I started beating her. Then her mother brought the acid. It was her destiny to die this way.
I don't think people are aware of just how prevalent it is, and that it is happening in the United States, that it's increasing here, and that it's not such a fluke when it does happen.
Her parents beat her after seeing her with a boy.
The police are saying the teen was abused because she didn't want to go through with an arranged marriage.
Georgia police say he strangled his daughter to protect his family's honor.
Muzamil Hassan is accused of beheading his wife after she filed for divorce.
And allegedly run down by her own father for becoming too westernized.
There was a case in Texas of Sarah and Amina Saeed who were murdered by their father, but what we found out afterward is that they had been regularly abused, they had been sexually abused, that they went to school with bruises, and normally a teacher or counselor has the responsibility to report that to the state, and the child should be removed from the home, but abuse.
That, I have to say, is a practice that is happening all the time up and down the UK, where girls are presenting not believed, or people thinking, don't lift up the hijab, don't check the bruises. And she's actually saying, I told them the bruises were there, but they wanted to be careful.
We shy away from criticizing anything that's different because we don't want to be seen as the type of people who would restrict people's expression. You know, and I think that that's very, very well motivated.
Why is it that everybody is afraid to say that Muslim women are deprived of their humanity?
Because people are, you know, slapped with these labels of being an Islamophobe, and people don't want to speak out.
And when you do dissent, you are threatened, you are bullied, you are intimidated, and that's happening here in the United States.
My mother, when I started the organization, the first thing out of her mouth, she said, you're going to get killed.
I've had fatwas, I've had death threats, I get hate mail.
The threats to rape you, burn your face with acid. I'm afraid all the time. Yeah. But that doesn't mean you can't also be courageous. It's very, very easy to break a twig or a stick. But when you bundle them together, you can't break that.
By us coming together, showing a united front, I'm sure we can defeat this.
On March 8th, over 25 human rights organizations around the world will join together with 9 women's rights activists to start a new movement to break the silence and bring about change. Starting March 8th, these nine activists will reach out to thousands of people to educate them about women's rights in a new film, Honor Diaries. Honor Diaries is the untold story of countless women and girls who suffer outrageous and shocking human rights abuses every day. Told exclusively through women's voices, Honor Diaries is the first film of its kind to bring together women's activists to shatter the silence and speak freely on the topic of honor. The UN has named March 8th International Women's Day, and on this day there will be screenings of Honor Diaries across the U.S. and around the world.
The continuation of this dialogue is in need to make the realization of the importance of women's voices with the support of men and women, of other faces, of other cultures, other communities, because without them we cannot make a change.
Hi guys, my name is Paula Queskin, and I'm the writer and producer of Honor Diaries. Honor Diaries talks about one of the most important human rights issues today, the subjugation and persecution of women in honor-based societies. We want the whole world to pay attention and talk about Honor Diaries and the important issues that it raises. We've already got screenings set up in the U.S., Canada, the U.K., but we need to move beyond that, and that's where you come in. We're raising money, $10,000 to be exact, to get the film translated and to get distribution and screenings set up in countries like Egypt, Afghanistan, and Pakistan. Without you, we really won't be able to do that. So please get involved and think about joining us and making a contribution. Be a part of the movement. Be the change you want to see in the world and get involved with Honor Diaries. Thanks so much.
I believe that there's no need to have dialoguing on this topic so people can get their perspectives from their given points of view. And I do support the showing of Honor Diaries, and I will do what I can to help them get this translated in languages around the world so that there can be dialogues. Now let's hear from Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, who has spent thousands upon thousands of hours looking into the question of the safety of vaccines. Here's what she has to say.
It says a lot about the industry where they had so many people standing in lines for 2 to 3 hours and, like I said, searching for which place would have it next when they ran out. I mean, it says a lot about the industry that they made such a big part of the population do what they did just to get...
There are less people being sheep today than there were 10 years ago is the best way I can answer that, because when I started getting really involved with this, which was back in September of 2000, and I went to the National Vaccine Information Center meeting in Washington, D.C., and I came home in 1985. I've been doing integrative medicine since 1996. This is now 2000. How did I miss this vaccine issue? Probably because I come from three generations of chiropractors, and none of my family members were vaccinated. I don't have any children, so I never had to address that issue in my own life. I didn't know any vaccine-injured persons, and so I thought, well, this is kind of an interesting thing. I sat through 3 days of meetings of vaccine-injured parents giving testimonials, scientists, doctors, all sorts of people talking about the bad things with vaccines. I thought, wow, how did I miss that? Well, maybe I ought to look into this. So the first paper that I read was the CDC's, the Center for Disease Control's paper, General Recommendations of Vaccination, their 1998 version of that paper. It was a 42-page paper, and I got to the end of it, and I went, this is it? I mean, this is it? This is what an entire industry is made off of? It's bad science and lots of hypothesis and some spelling errors and grammar errors, and this is it? A multi-billion dollar, maybe I ought to look into this a little farther. Well, looking into it a little bit farther has led to 12,000 hours of research over the last 11 years. And, you know, you can't find what you're not looking for. But when you're looking for stuff, you can actually find it. And you find all of the bad science, all of the shoddy research, all of the studies that the conclusion of the abstract doesn't match anything that's reported in the rest of the study. And you start looking around for all of the documented evidence of where problems come from. Like, for example, some of the side effects of vaccines that we know of that are published in the medical literature, this is a short list. Autoimmune disease, lupus, ITP, thyroiditis, hives and rashes, reactive arthritis, chronic juvenile arthritis, seizures, MS, MS-like syndromes, CNS demyelinization, polyneuropathy, insulin-dependent diabetes, vasculitis, a whole long list of vascular diseases. visual problems like bilateral optic neuritis, central retinal artery occlusion, which causes blindness, hearing loss, profound deafness, nephrotic syndrome, and glomerulonephritis, which are kidney diseases, asthma, eczema, and yes, autism. And guess what? That list I just read you is just attached to the hepatitis B vaccine. Now, what about all the other vaccines and all the other types of conditions? So when I said earlier about that the vaccine industry is the backbone of the pharmaceutical industry, if everybody gets, children get hepatitis B vaccine at birth and they can develop this list of things, how many drugs are sold and hospitalizations and all kinds of things that are happening for a lifetime of those conditions as a potential side effect of just that one vaccine is starting from birth going forward. It holds the industry up. If we stop it, even if we stop it by 50%, our healthcare, the spectrum of our healthcare industry will change completely.
That was Dr. Sherry Timpenny, a medical doctor, 12,000 hours of research. And yet not once has she been invited to appear to debate. And yet in Australia, when she went down there for a book signing tour, they canceled every one of her speeches. They had a whole hate campaign against her. Not a single person wanted her to give a talk in Australia. Now, we've been told that weapons of mass destruction existed, and that was the justification for going into Iraq. That was all based upon lies. Here's who actually said it first. And listen carefully what he says and listen to what his wife says. And they had the same intelligence and listen to where they went with it.
What we must know about the 21st. In this century, we learned through harsh experience that the only answer to aggression and illegal behavior is firmness, determination, and when necessary, action. In the next century, the community of nations may see more and more of the very kind of threat Iraq poses now, a rogue state with weapons of mass destruction, ready to use them or provide them to terrorists, drug traffickers, or organized criminals who travel the world among us unnoticed. If we fail to respond today, Saddam and all those who would follow in his footsteps will be emboldened tomorrow by the knowledge that they can act with impunity, even in the face of a clear message, United Nations Security Council, and clear evidence of a weapons of mass destruction program.
Here's part two.
Now, I believe the facts that have brought us to this fateful vote are not in doubt. Saddam Hussein is a tyrant who has tortured and killed his own people, even his own family members, to maintain his iron grip on power. He used chemical weapons on Iraqi Kurds and on Iranians, killing over 20,000 people. Unfortunately, during the 1980s, while he engaged in such horrific activity, he enjoyed the support of the American government because he had oil and was seen as a counterweight to the Ayatollah Khomeini in Iran. In 1991, Saddam Hussein invaded and occupied Kuwait, losing the support of the United States. The first President Bush assembled a global coalition, including many Arab states, and threw Saddam out after 43 days of bombing and 100 hours of ground operations. The United States-led coalition then withdrew, leaving the Kurds and the Shiites who had risen against Saddam Hussein at our urging to Saddam's revenge. As a condition for ending the conflict, the United Nations imposed a number of requirements on Iraq, among them disarmament of all weapons of mass destruction, stocks used to make such weapons, and laboratories necessary to do the work. Saddam Hussein agreed, and an inspection system was set up to ensure compliance. And though he repeatedly lied, delayed, and obstructed the inspection's work, the inspectors found and destroyed far more weapons of mass destruction capability than were destroyed in the Gulf War, including thousands of chemical weapons, large volumes of chemical and biological stocks, a number of missiles and warheads, a major lab equipped to produce anthrax and other bioweapons, as well as substantial nuclear facilities. In the 4 years since the inspectors left, intelligence reports show that Saddam Hussein has worked to rebuild his chemical and biological weapons stock, his missile delivery capability, and his nuclear program. He has also given aid, comfort, and sanctuary to terrorists, including Al-Qaeda members, though there is apparently no evidence of his involvement in the terrible events of September the 11th, 2001. It is clear, however, that if left unchecked, Saddam Hussein will continue to increase his capacity to wage biological and chemical warfare and will keep trying to develop nuclear weapons. Should he succeed in that endeavor, he could alter the political and security landscape of the Middle East, which, as we know all too well, affects American security.
Keep in mind that everything she just said, with one point, was erroneous, as was what her husband said. Now take a look at the reality. He did not have a nuclear program. He did not have chemical and biological weapons at that point. And the UN inspectors were showing that he was complying. But they had an agenda. And now you see who was a part of that agenda. And also remember that, how did Saddam Hussein in the 1980s get his chemical and biological agents, including his nerve gas, from the United States and Great Britain? And who sponsored Saddam Hussein during the eight-year war with Iran, where over a million casualties? The United States. Who shared intelligence and satellite reconnaissance? The United States. So why didn't we put ourselves on trial along with Saddam Hussein? We don't do that. And this is a person that the American public will elect president of the United States, and you expect any different outcome in the future? Oh, and by the way, Libya was controlled by your typical type of tyrant, yes, but not to the people, the masses of people living there. Why don't you take a look at what Libya looks like today? It is the largest hotbed of terrorist activity in that part of the world. And remember who goaded us on, who cheered us on? Hillary Clinton. I'm Gary Null. We're out of time today. Thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more on tomorrow's program. Have a nice day, everyone.